Hashtag Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. Wow. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports edutainment.
Yeah.
It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Hello, hello. It is Wednesday, June the 3rd, and the basement broadcasts continue. I'm Sid Sixero in mine. He is
trademark.
Tim McAuliffe. In
trademark.
His, I like it. Let's get that done, guys. Let's get that done. This
trademark
is Tim
pending.
And Sid. How much would that cost to trademark something? In all seriousness, McAuliffe. What does that cost?
No idea. Tim and Citizens at Tim and Sid. What would it cost to either patent or trademark? I don't know what the hell one we're looking for.
I think it's a
basement
trademark.
Broadcast. TM, you know what I'm talking about? A little Tim McAuliffe.
A little TM. You should just get TM trademark for you as your logo.
For
Tim McAuliffe.
I should trademark.
Boom. We are live. By the way, did you get that hail last night in Southern Ontario? Did you feel any of that? I thought my windows were going to bust in.
I was outside on a Zoom call. And I thought it was rather symbolic as the thunder rolled in southern Ontario. I didn't.
So wasn't a good Zoom call? Is what you're telling me?
By the end, I moved inside, and then I heard the hail hitting the windows. But I wasn't outside, which would have been awesome. I have a little awning in the backyard. An awning.
He's got a nice setup. He doesn't like to brag. I'll brag for him. It's at least a $70,000 backyard. Like, just, he doesn't want to brag about it. I'm making that figure up.
And I work my ass off for that.
Better believe it. Better. That's why you need a trademark TM.
I didn't know about the hail. The hail I missed.
Tim, I'm surprised I didn't have damage all over my place. You know me. I geek out on weather. I follow meteorologists across Canada. Somebody threw up a radar of a hook in southern Mississauga. Like around Lakeshore. That hook, if you're a meteorologist, Timmy, means one thing. By hook or by crook, a tornado's trying to form. And there were huge trees down all over the southern part of the city. I got lucky. But, Tim, it got a little hairy. So I'm glad you didn't have to deal with the hail. That was a hail of an experience. Sorry. We're live. I deserve that. We're live on TV, radio, online, available 24/7 on podcasts. If you need some weather tips, we're here for you as well. Coming up on today's show, a show that has kind of gone from 0 to 60 here in the last 20 minutes or so, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, one of our favorites, Dwayne Casey, will be by. As all of you remember, former Raptors head coach, his perspective in these times is needed. We will talk to him about a number of things that matter. So we'll talk to Dwayne in a bit.
Yeah, things that matter. We also might get some basketball in there, some return to play basketball, which we're going to talk about a bit, and coaches around the National Hockey League getting ready for their eventual return to play. Oilers head coach Dave Tippett is one of those guys. We'll speak to him next hour, top of the hour, too sweet to be sour. Dave Tippett, Edmonton Oilers. It looks as though he's got a pair of Hart Trophy winners. Eventually, on his roster.
Oh, give yourself an ooh. You are giving Leon Draisaitl. You are letting him have it. And I don't disagree with it.
Okay, good. We'll speak to him next hour. And also, is baseball about to screw this entire thing up? We've been asking it for a while. Dave Shinen, Washington Post. Sid, you chuckle, you laugh. You have been the eternal optimist, the one on this show, surprisingly, during this time. That has said, you can't see them screwing this up.
I'm gonna stay the eternal optimist, Tim. I'm just disappointed because I don't think July 4th weekend's happening. Just from a time frame standpoint, I think they've wasted. I think we can agree on the fact that they've wasted time. That is a universal truth. Mm-hmm. And the July 4th weekend would have huge symbolic meaning down in the States. Although right now there's other things going on in the States, so maybe I'm not as sure on that as I used to be. I just think July 4th is done. I still think they're getting a deal. There's a 50-game proposal from the owners, 114 for the players. What's the middle of that? I'm not a math major. But negocios and negocios, and you could probably find something in the middle where the owners are satisfied and the players, I don't know. I still think they're going to get it done. I'm just annoyed that I think they missed their window for July 4th. That's my annoyance.
Interesting. I'm pausing here on live national television and radio because every time I look at my computer, which is over to the side, I see another massive sports name trending. Yeah. And I have to click on it. I have to see. And in the last little while, it's just been statements from these massive sports names that I'm clicking on. And as Sid said off the top of the show, seemingly every 2 seconds we have a new one. Every 2 seconds it changes where we should go on this show. But part of me wonders, like, are we going to parse the words of every statement that we see released? Are we going to debate the sincerity of the statement released, or their inability or ability to articulate themselves in a time where the ability to articulate yourself is remarkably, remarkably important? Is this going to get us where we need to be? Will this distract us from the steps that we need to take to get to where we need to be? Like, Drew Brees provides the ESPN hot take of the day when he goes back to kneeling for the national anthem. And my initial reaction is, oh man, are we going to let this get co-opted too? Like, are we going to allow this to turn into that? Because if you turn on ESPN right now, you will hear that debate again. When I thought, when we sat down here and had initial discussions about this, we could get away from that and it would simply be right versus wrong, because what everyone saw was wrong, and we didn't have to have the co-opted conversation where people take one thing that everyone saw and everyone said was wrong, and now turn it right, or turn it left, or turn it slightly, and have a different conversation. And how frustrating that is to me. I don't know that I can, like, I don't know if I can do those shows.
I don't think you're going to have to answer your question earlier in that. I don't think you're going to have to. I think what's unique to this Drew Brees story, and we have the clip, and we'll run it here in a couple seconds, is I've only read this clip. I have not heard this clip. But but it's not only Drew Brees. Can we agree on one of the biggest names in sports? Like, I think we can all agree that Drew Brees is kind of one of those guys, yeah, right?
NFL, like, Man of the Year, NFL MVP.
Yeah. I think we can all agree on that. What I am seeing here, Tim, and what you are seeing here off what Drew Brees said today about kneeling during the national anthem, the reaction it got from Richard Sherman, the reaction it got from a teammate of his in Michael Thomas, the reaction it got from LeBron James, I believe makes this unique. And I don't believe you and I are going to have to parse everything. And for the record, we haven't. There's been a lot of statements out there. You and I have not had the patience. We didn't have to speak on it. Through telepathic means, you and I connected on that. To go through every statement is kind of pointless because, quite frankly, not all of them are that interesting or relevant or helpful.
Or the sincere. Reaction
that, or sincere. But what Drew Brees is getting today makes this different. So I have the audio, Timmy. This is probably a good time to play it, right?
Yeah, I'm good with
okay.
that.
All right, so this was, again, an interview with Yahoo. Drew Brees spoke to Daniel Roberts. You're going to hear the question first, what led him there. The clip, Tim, just for the record and for everyone working on Tim, the clip is 1 minute 44 seconds. If you get the gist of what you need to hear, Tim, give a wave and just chime back in, and then we'll have the discussion, because I don't know if we need the whole 144 because I haven't heard this. So, again, this is Drew Brees. This is what has pissed so many people off in the last several hours around the sports world. And you have to do something interesting to piss people off nowadays. The bar's pretty high, but Drew Brees found a way. This was the Yahoo interview everyone's talking about. Go ahead.
Everyone is looking back now at Kaepernick's protests from a few years ago, and obviously they were always about police brutality, and now it's coming back to the fore, and a lot of people expect that we will see players kneeling again even when the NFL season starts. So I'm curious how you think the NFL will and should respond to that, and of course you're such a leader in the league. What is your responsibility as a leader in times like this for the rest of your teammates and players in the league?
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II, one in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better, and that we are all part of the solution.
That was Drew Brees in an interview with Yahoo that was posted today that has pissed off a lot of people. Tim, I'm with you. I can't believe we're back here so soon. I can't believe it got hijacked again.
But you only allow, like, this is the part for me that is important about it. It's only hijacked if you allow it to get hijacked. And what you're doing by bringing it back to the flag is moving the goalposts once again, which was my beef with the initial concern with Colin Kaepernick when we did these shows years ago.
Four years ago.
And people wanted to have a conversation, and I'm just saying, okay, don't, like, he went and he talked to a former Navy SEAL and asked him what would be the way to protest, and so you're not good with this protest and you're not good with that protest, and don't move the goalposts. Leave the goalposts where they are. The only people who want to move the goalposts are the ones that don't agree with where the goalposts are right now. And I thought when we saw this one, we could just see right from wrong. And we didn't have to see anything else. But here we are again, and I'm wondering, in the moment, on a day where I didn't think we would get to, if the goalposts are going to get moved back to if someone takes a knee, even though we have seen police departments across the United States take a knee with protesters, that we wouldn't have to go through that again. And maybe there'll be enough people who speak out. And I'm okay with you evolving, Drew Brees. I'm okay with you saying, I shouldn't have said that. That was a mistake. Like Kendall Coyne Schofield did. You see the statement from Kendall Coyne Schofield?
Forgive me. I missed that one.
She at the time tweeted out, no one should kneel, disrespectful of the flag, and then said, I learned better, and posted her own tweet.
Right.
Owned up to it and said, I've learned, and we can do better. And I hope that's where we end up with Drew Brees, because otherwise you're just moving the goalposts, or you're allowing people to move the goalposts once again when the issue is not that. The issue is systematic racism. And what you were describing was what you see through your eyes, Drew Brees, and the definition of empathy or compassion is being able to see through others' eyes. And I thought NFL Man of the Year Drew Brees would be able to do that a little bit better, especially in a locker room that he shares with so many people who obviously have differing viewpoints, like his favorite receiver, Michael Thomas.
I'm floored. And we ran the Jed York clip yesterday, owner of the San Francisco 49ers, trying to track back what 4 years ago was with Kaepernick. And he did it in an ass backwards way, saying no one really said racism. Well, no, Jed, people did. People did. That was the whole point. A Twitter account from Washington made it into something else. But the point was what we're seeing. We're living it. We're living it. And Drew Brees like that? But Tim, you mentioned it earlier when you brought up ESPN. It's already been hijacked. What do you think the next week on ESPN is going to look like? There's still nothing going on. The NBA Board of Governors tomorrow are going to vote to come back. Huge. Major League Soccer is coming back. Huge. But what do you think the topic's going to be? And politicians will pick at it as well, like they did 4 years ago. Never mind in an election year. Because I think you and I can agree. There are going to be a lot of athletes in the National Football League come September. Because who knows what the state of play will be. And probably many more than 4 years ago who are going to be kneeling during national anthems.
Right.
Like, let's not kid ourselves here. And the reaction I'm seeing here, Tim, from people in the game of football, his own teammates, and people from LeBron, tells me that you don't need much of any kerosene for this thing to go up inside any league, any dressing room, anywhere. Because right now, sports has been kind of on the, okay, we're negotiating and let's see where things go, while the story's played out. Other than the activists and guys like Jaylen Brown and Malcolm Brogdon doing great things. This kind of infighting you haven't seen. You have a white superstar in his sport who has just been swarmed on social media by some of the biggest African-American names in sport. That conversation is not going anywhere. The other stuff, Tim, you were alluding to, I'm with you. There's a lot of empty statements out there. I got no time for. We literally have no time for. We got a break in like 4 minutes. This Drew Brees messed up on a lot of levels. He messed up within his own team, within the sports community, and within a league who did not want this conversation again. You think Roger Goodell really wants this again?
No.
No chance. Incredible.
Incredible. This is it already, though. Someone with the, and there's a few of them. Someone writes in and says, are you two fools saying someone who respects the American flag is wrong? Nope. What we said was, don't change the topic. The topic is protest. The topic is police brutality and how to change systematic racism. And what you have done is you've allowed it to turn into that same thing over again when we thought we were past that. No one is attempting to disrespect the American flag or any flag for that matter. They're trying to change the way you look at them. Right versus wrong. And if you say you're not for equality, you're on the wrong side of history. Equality. That's it. That's all.
Well put, Timmy. Well put. This is not the last time you and I are going to speak on this story, I would guess. But for the moment, I would like to pivot here momentarily because... Sorry, Tim, you want to add one more thing?
No, I was going to do the exact same pivot that you wanted.
We're both
working from the basement and we're on a one-second
delay. Here's the
thing.
Let me tee up Tim's tee up for what we're going to do now before we break. Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, is going to join us momentarily for a conversation that I am looking forward to that we need to have. But full disclosure, that's not the first time that one of us on this show has had a real conversation with Coach Casey. Is that right, Tim?
Yeah. I'm not sure. And correct me if I'm wrong here. So I'm not sure we've enjoyed talking to a guest as much as we have enjoyed the conversations that we have had.
He's right up
next
there.
Guest.
Yeah.
And it's in part because of how wide-ranging the topics have always been. Two of my favorite interviews of all time and one of my dad's favorite interviews that I've ever done was in conversation with Dwayne Casey. The first came on the day of Muhammad Ali's funeral, about Dwayne Casey growing up in segregated Kentucky and what Ali meant to a young boy, a young man who was about to be among the first to desegregate a school. Ponder that for a second. As tough as that is to fathom for a generation, desegregate a school. In other words, they were separated by race. And we had another conversation where we were just looking back at how far he had come from that young man in Kentucky to eventually becoming the head coach at an NBA All-Star game when he went down this road with me. And looking back, I'm glad that we have been able to share these conversations with Dwayne Casey, and he'll join us next here on Tim and Sid.
We do have that clip from Dwayne Casey back in the day, Timmy. I would like to let it breathe a little bit in terms of what the conversation was like back in the day, because I think it's important. I think it was a great conversation you had with him. So I do want to play that here. Guys, coming down in 3, 2, 1, Tim and Dwayne.
When we integrated schools, there were families and parents outside the schools with signs that were saying not very nice things about go home with the N-word and we don't want you here. And they called the National Guards in to help us go into schools and that type of thing. And as a little kid, you know, I'm thinking now, if my kids had to go through that now, how scarred for life would they be? But the beautiful thing about that, Tim, some of those same kids whose parents didn't want me at that school are my friends today.
Some important conversations that have happened on this show, specifically between Tim and Dwayne. We're going to take a break. On the other side, one more conversation with the one and only Dwayne Casey here on Tim and Sid, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet590.ca, and available on pod 24/7.
This is Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and at the top of the hour, we will be on Sportsnet. If you ever miss any part of the show, you can go back and listen to it via the podcast, 24/7, wherever you get your fine podcasts and not-so-fine podcasts. Dave Tippett, head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, will join us at the top of the hour, as will Dave Shinen, as we will discuss a potential return to play in Major League Baseball. But in the meantime, as we mentioned before the break, one of our favorites is up next, Sidney.
He is the head coach of the Detroit Pistons. He is Dwayne Casey, and he's known us for a long time, yet continues to come on with us, which is a shock to me every time because we don't deserve his presence. Coach, it's great to hear your voice. How are things? How are the family? How you doing?
Doing great. Is this Sid? I used to tell your voices from each other, but now I have to guess that I think it's Sid. How you doing, guys?
It's the voice. Yes, it's I'm Sid. I'm the I'm the attractive one of the duo. Tim is the other voice you will hear.
Well, that's not what Tim told me.
Yeah, we speak the truth to each other, Coach. How are you? How's the family?
Doing good. Doing good. You know, going through this pandemic has been good and bad. It gave us, you know, gave us a chance to spend time with the family and watch the kids grow and get to know your family real well. And so that's the positive. But the negative is the fact that, you know, you're not used to being home as much. So you miss basketball and miss the grind of going through the season. But hopefully, you know, everybody there in Toronto and you guys, your family was healthy and made it through this thing. It's still not over, so we still have to be careful. But I think we're through the worst of it.
Coach, let's dive into kind of what the moment is. And you you did release a statement on Saturday through the Detroit Pistons, and we've gone through your story in terms of desegregation at a very young age and going through that when camera phones were not around, and you have an 8-year-old child now, and just your general sense And I know it changes by the minute sometimes, depending on what the news cycle is. But where are you at? What's going through your head right now?
Well, I'm frustrated and angry, guys. But the most important thing, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because I watch these protests, the peaceful protests going up and down in every city around the country. And in the 60s and the early 70s, most of those were African-Americans. 60s marching with Martin Luther King up and down the street. Those were mostly African-Americans. But today you see every color, every race, every religion walking up and down the street protesting for what is right. And so that gives me hope. But every time I turn on the television, I see the video of George Floyd in Minneapolis, where I used to coach and know a lot of, still have a lot of friends there. I watch the video of the young man jogging down the street in Georgia. I know the folks in Louisville, Kentucky, where the young lady was shot in her apartment. And even in Dallas, a young man was sitting in his living room, and a policeman walks in, thinks, you know, mistakes her apartment for his and shoots him, and the young man's a doctor. So just all those things, you know, it's not just one incident, guys. It's so many things over and over and over again. Some of them overt, some of them are very subtle. And luckily, you know, myself and I know Masai's spoken out, you know, we have a small platform where we can at least voice it and make sure we get it to, you know, touch a few hearts, get, you know, have someone to at least listen a little bit. And if they have any brains at all or have a heart at all, they have to listen and at least consider if they think, you know, they have anybody around them or anybody in their family that's a racist, you know, let them know it's not right. It's not right. And it's not just against black people. We have a lot of Chaldean folks here in Michigan, you know, it just whoever it is, don't look at the other race other than yourself as somebody that's less human. And the more we can think that way, the better off we're going to be and be able to live together. And hopefully this is a good point, men, a good time that will change, be the time for change right now.
Dwayne Casey joining us here on Tim and Sid. And Coach, we've had a few of these conversations, and what popped into my head initially was, is this any different than the previous 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 times where these conversations have come up? And you kind of addressed that in your first answer, which leads me to, how important is the group? Because when you walked into a school in Kentucky, when a lot of people didn't want you there, I don't know if the group was that big. So how important is it that it's not just one or two or 40 that need to take on the burden, but that so many are willing, almost feel a pressure to share in that burden?
I think it's so important. Like you said, walking in, some of those folks that I fought against every day when I was in third and fourth grade, they're my friends today. But it took them getting to know me. But I think it's going to take everybody. And it's not just going to be about talking about it, Tim. It's going to be about, you know, action. Going to your local police department, going to the legislature, to there in Parliament there in Canada, to talk about policy change, changing the laws. The judicial system is so rigged against the minority, it's not even funny. And it's, you know, just going to be interesting to see what happens to the policemen in Minnesota just because of the system. You know, my thing is, myself, I've got to call into our police chief here in Detroit to sit down and talk to him, my owner, myself, to talk to him about what we can do with their training in their police academy, because that's where it starts, is the policemen, how they train, what the rules are, the policies that they have to get those changed or get some real teeth in them if they decide to go off and go rogue or go to be a bad cop. So those are the things we all can do in our local markets, our local cities, to help promote change. Because if you try to go and change the whole country at one time, it's probably not going to happen right away. But what happens is if everybody, and we talked about this in our coaches meeting, if we can go out as individual groups, you know, each market, and go talk to the local leaders, the lawmakers. And again, it's going to take a guy like my owner, you know, because they're going to look at myself, Nate McMillan, and Doc Rivers as three angry old black men. But until, you know, Greg Pop and Steve Kerr and Rick Carlisle speaks up, that's when they will listen. And then the owners step in, they will listen. Because, you know, again, to right, wrong, and different, when they speak up and the majority speaks up, that's when real change will happen. And, you know, to change the policies and the laws. And that's what we're shooting for. That's why it was intentional to put Pop in the lead and Steve Kerr in the lead, you know, and Rick Carlisle in the lead of the coaches committee, and Stan Van Gundy's on there and doing a heck of a job. So that's important that, you know, the white coaches step up and speak out against racism, injustice, and all these things. And so that group, when those groups, or the group of influential people and influential coaches in every sport speak out, that's when real change can happen and we start changing things.
Pistons head coach Dwayne Casey here on Tim and Sid. Part of your statement, Dwayne, that stuck out to me, well, the entire thing stuck out to me, but this line was interesting. You said, we must change the way we see and hear each other. When you watch cable news right now, when you see what's going on, when you see that these protests have gone global, Australia, Paris, London, do you think we are changing the way we hear and see each other?
I totally do, Sid. I think it's really, and that's why I think this moment in time can be a lightning rod for us. Sort of like the marches back in the 60s with Dr. King and by the way, who got killed. He was probably the most nonviolent man alive, but he got killed by violence. And that's the irony of that. But I think right now it can be a lightning rod. You know, you got the whole world watching and listening. And that's the most important thing that I think this situation has done. It's allowed me, who in normal times people say, oh, stick to coaching, stick to being a general manager, stick to basketball, do what you know. But it's allowed now everyone to put them in position to listen. You know, listen to Dwayne Casey, listen to Masai Ujiri, listen to whoever, LeBron James, talk about sensitive things that makes everybody uncomfortable. And I think it's to make, you know, once everybody's uncomfortable, I think that's the most important time for change. And I think that's what this whole, unfortunately and fortunately, this situation with George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery has done, is it allowed people to listen and go fight through their uncomfortable feeling of, okay, am I a racist? No, that's not the point. But, you know, it's a situation where, you know, people like yourself, Tim and Sid, who I know are not racist and whatsoever, but people who may say, well, am I, you know, or have guilt feelings, it allows them to actively listen to everyone. And I think that's what these times are doing now, is making that okay to speak out. Because normally, you know, everybody say, I'll stick up and shut up and stick to basketball. But right, living through it, going to the courthouse, going to the restaurant or the courthouse and seeing, you know, white restrooms and color. Those, you know, we've come away from those times, but still there's a lot of work still to be done.
We were just talking before you joined us about when things get reframed is when it gets dangerous, because all we're talking about is equality.
Right, and right.
If we can just keep it on equality, I think there are way more people who understand that.
Right. Right.
How do we not allow the conversation to be hijacked into anything else but equality?
Tim, that is a great statement, because that's what everyone gets afraid of. You know, nobody, I don't think anybody in the protest or anybody that's speaking out right now is asking for a handout, asking for an opportunity, you know, something more than anybody else is getting. Like you said, all anyone is asking for is equality. Let's start at the goal line, at the same mark, and let's start the race there. See how, who works the hardest, who trains the hardest, who studies the hardest, and now let's run that 50-yard dash. You know, you start out at the 10, and now I'm at the goal line. You're going to win that no matter how hard I work. And if you're running and I start running, it's going to be hard as hell for me to catch you. So the quality part is all anyone is asking for is look at me, look at George Floyd, look at Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor in Kentucky. Look at them the same way as any other human. I saw a statistic. 65% of the people in Minnesota had that chokehold that was arrested, had that chokehold used on them. 19% of white, 65% were African American. 19% were white that had the chokehold used on them. So, and it's only a small portion of a percentage, small percentage of population of blacks in Minneapolis. So, you know, those are the equality things that you're asking for, to be treated the same, to be spoke to the same, to be looked at the same. And nobody's asking for a handout. Just look at African Americans, Hispanic, whatever the race is. Let's look at each other as equals, as equal human beings.
It was great to hear your voice, Coach.
Yeah.
Honestly. Thank you, Sid.
It was really... It was really good for you to come on.
Thank
you didn't
you.
Have to, but we appreciate it. All the best to you and the family. And let's have another discussion down the road about
basketball.
You know, about other issues. But if we need to have this discussion, then let's have this discussion. Hopefully we won't have to have this discussion.
And that's the other thing, guys. Let's don't stop talking about it or be uncomfortable to talk about it. And that's why I respect you guys. You're not uncomfortable to talk about it. That says a lot right there, and that's a step. But we got to keep doing this. When the cameras go off of Minneapolis, when the cameras go off of the marches and protests, I think the conversation, and it's not a bad conversation, it's not adversarial, it's just awareness. You know, continue to beat the drum. Awareness hopefully will lead to changing laws and policies and procedures in the police department. And I think that's where this conversation, these conversations with friends and people who understand and have empathy will take it.
Empathy, compassion, and I hope over the 20 years we've been in this business that we've proven that we're willing to evolve, learn, share in the uncomfort, and share in the burden. And maybe others will do the same. Thanks, Coach.
Yep. Thank you, guys. Love you both. Okay, thank you.
You too. I don't think we've said, I love you, more than we have in the last week to colleagues, co-hosts, friends, and others in the business.
Ironically enough, not to each other.
I love you, Sid.
Love you, brother. Love you, man. Let's talk about that conversation after the break. It's not going to be a huge segment coming up, but I'm sure there's some tweets. Timmy, nice job on that. Thank you for listening to that. Thanks for Coach Casey for calling in. More Tim and Sid after this on TV, radio, online, and on pod. Talk to you in a second.
Hey, Tim and Sid, Ron, 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 Pacific. As you know, we have In Conversation today. It's the Calgary Flames GM, Brad Treliving, who was a player, made it in junior, made it to the pros, and stayed in the game, so his whole life in the game. And same with Kyle Dubas in Sault Ste. Marie, as you know, stick boy at age 11, GM up there at 25, and now in charge of the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's 7ET, 4 Pacific, our In Conversation today.
Pair of GMs with Ron McLean. Coming up later, we're going to talk to Dave Tippett, who will go head coach in the National Hockey League, as they continue to prepare for whenever their return to play occurs in the National Hockey League. The NBA's Board of Governors intends to approve, at least according to reports, a league proposal on a 22-team format to restart their season in Orlando. Conference call is set for 12:30 Eastern on Thursday. Plan includes 13 Western Conference teams, 9 Eastern Conference teams, 8 regular season games to determine who and where could possibly play a play-in tournament for the eighth seed and the playoffs. The top 16 teams in the Eastern and Western Conference would be joined by teams currently within six games of eighth place in the two conference. That's why you have 9-1 and 13 in the other. Got it, Gooden, since you understood. Sid Sixero, your reaction to what is being talked about in the NBA. And for those wondering, that means the Wizards are included in the top eight in the East. Blazers, Pelicans, Kings, Spurs, and Suns, all within six games of eighth place.
Hate it. But I also hate every idea I've heard so far from every league. So I'm just prefacing there, Tim. I'm not getting specific with the NBA. We all know this is imperfect. We all know this is kind of not thrown together completely, but close. So you can nitpick at a bunch of stuff. I don't hate the play-in between the eight and nine seeds, whoever they turn out to be. And according to Shams, the nine seed has to beat the eight seed twice. Eight seed only has to beat the nine seed the one time. So you got to beat them two straight games. That's what I read, Tim. Forgive me. I could be wrong. But that's what I read. Shams described it. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, because there's a lot of things happening right now. But I don't mind. I don't mind that 8-9 playoff. I actually think that's kind of cool. You got to beat the eight seed twice in a row. Go ahead. So I'm happy. I'm happy this is moving forward. I'm elated. I still don't quite understand what MLS is doing, if I'm being perfectly honest. You and I have had this discussion this week, but I'm elated. The NBA tomorrow at 12.
I lost Sid Sixero for a second, but the conversation when he pops back now becomes for the NBA, what happens to those like the Raptors? And he's back. You're back, Sid, just so you know.
I'm back.
What happens to those like the Raptors who want the home court that they earned during the regular season? And I'm with you on the MLS, and I'd like to have a conversation surrounding that, but I'm not sure we'll have the time. I'm going to read off some of the ideas being bandied about, and our friend Dave McMenamin was reporting some of these ideas on how to reward those who earned their spot and their home court advantage through the first 70 or so games of the year. And here are some of them. Stop me whenever you want us to jump in. Higher-seeded teams being awarded the first possession of the second, third, and fourth quarters following a traditional jump ball to begin the game.
Does nothing for me. Minor advantage. Nothing for me.
Higher-seed team being allowed to designate one player to be whistled for seven fouls instead of six before being fouled out.
That's just going to mean that one of their worst guys gets a couple more fouls. I don't like
that. You send someone in just to go beat the crap out of somebody. You got a star, Giannis?
Or higher seeded team picks one different player per game in the series to eliminate. Cannot play.
Cannot play.
You can't do it twice to the same player, but for every game you pick one person.
I see.
You know what I'm saying? And that person sits because you are the higher seed. I like where this is going.
You can't start adding jokes in because some of these already sound like jokes. Sorry. Higher seeded team receiving an extra coach's challenge. Meh.
I'm fine. Yeah, I'm
higher
fine with
seeded
that.
Teams.
I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that.
Higher seeded teams
one.
Being able to transport their actual hardwood home court from their arenas to Orlando to try and preserve the feel of a home court.
Hmm. Okay. For aesthetic's sake, for TV sakes, I like it. I'll live with that one.
In order of seeding 1 to 16. Teams will be able to pick the hotel that they will stay at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex in Disney. Now, these are actually, one executive suggested to ESPN that the NBA should present the higher-seeded teams with a menu of league-approved options before each game or series and have them pick one. It's a different Gilbert Arenas. Pick one.
Less violent one. Tim, you got a couple more, Tim? I got one for you.
No, that's it.
All right, we got 60 seconds. And I'm not even kidding about this. You want to give an advantage? Here's your advantage. If you are a lower-seeded team in the playoffs and you rebound the ball with the game tied and under 5 seconds to go, you have to J.R. Smith dribble it to center court and just let it go to overtime. You are not allowed to shoot. It's called the J.R. Smith rule. You are not allowed to shoot tied, under 5 seconds to go. Choose whatever player you want to meme, like LeBron. You could designate a memer.
Understood.
But that is an advantage that would work out as well.
I don't mind you impersonating J.R. Smith's rebounding in a tie game, but whatever you do, don't touch his car. Coming up,
we learned that
Dave Tippett will join us live here on Tim and Sid. Head coach of the Edmonton Oilers is next.
Time for Tim and Sid. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McCallum and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdogs. The second hour of Tim and Sid as we go live on Sportsnet along with Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and across the Sportsnet Radio Network. If you missed hour number one, you missed our conversation with Dwayne Casey, who, as per usual, was wonderful in our conversation with him. And if you want to go back and get it, you can get it on a podcast. Just Google Tim and Sid. Wherever you get your fine podcasts, you can find ours as well, even though you might not regard it as being fine.
I think it's a fine enough show, Tim. By the way, you mentioned during the Dwayne Casey interview, I'm a little biased, but whatever. You mentioned during the Dwayne Casey interview, we've been in the business 20 years. Whenever you do that, and you'll do it often, but like once in a while you'll reframe how old we are, it does freak me out a little bit. And thank you to all of you poor souls who've been with us every step of the way. Love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for that. But every time, just so you know, every time you do that, you kind of stop me in my tracks momentarily because it's a reminder because I do have some more. The one thing that being quarantined and doing shows from home, the grays, I'm having a harder time hiding the grays. I don't know if you can notice. I don't know if it's coming through on the shot.
Oh, I can notice.
On Sportsnet. You can notice? I got more sideburn gray going on than normal.
Right.
So, but thank you again to Dwayne Casey. For those just joining us across the Sportsnet main networks across the country, highly, highly recommend you go back and find the Dwayne Casey interview. Just type in Tim and Sid on Rogers Ignite once we're done, and you will have it. And he was great. He was honest. He was kind with his time. Typical case. Typical Dwayne Casey. You know. And Tim, the one thing I wanted to ask him. And forgive me for bringing this up, but I had it in the queue, and he was so great, I couldn't get to it. But, I mean, we all see what's going on down in the States. There's also a conversation up here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people kind of looking around our own backyard, you know, and looking in the mirror. The one thing I wanted to ask Coach Casey was, what was his experience like working in this country? Now, he is the head coach of an NBA team that is beloved. And at the time, was reaching a level of success they'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. So a part of me thinks it was okay, but I don't know that. I don't know what Dwayne's experience was like in Canada. And I wanted to ask him about it, and we didn't have the time because we got to a bunch of other stuff that we had to get to that was important as well.
It's an interesting conversation.
You know what I mean? Like I would assume what that would be as head coach of a loved franchise coast to coast in Canada. That won a lot of games. You know, they ran into LeBron a lot. That was their curse. Mm-hmm. And they won a lot of games. What was it really like? Like, what was it? That was the one thing I wanted to put on the table for Dwayne. I just didn't get a chance, but maybe next time.
And I've talked to, you know, a lot of CFL players who came up here and stayed. And there's a little bit of a different context. Not much, because in a lot of the smaller cities in Canada that have CFL franchises, if you play for that CFL franchise, you are beloved immediately.
Correct.
And that might change the context. But, yeah, I mean, it would be interesting to talk to an American who comes up here to see the differences between what Canada goes through. And it's hard for them to understand, especially if they're in a city like Toronto, the differences between how Canada treats the Indigenous people of this country and how they would treat other people of color, but I think there's a general sense that you could probably get from an American who lived most of their life in the United States of America versus moving up here to Canada.
And I just think, and it's a conversation we'll probably continue to have because this story is that big and that important to everybody.
Speaking of, but I'm just hearing pinballs on the show tomorrow. So maybe you can ask that question of Michael Pinball Clemens.
I will. That's another he is qualified to answer that as an American-born man who's been in Canada a long time. So we'll definitely go down. And another voice you just kind of want to hear is pinball. Yeah. So we'll talk to pinball tomorrow. Dave Tippett is the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, and I'm sure he has had about all the Chicago Blackhawks game tape he can handle right now. Coach Tippett, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. How are you guys doing today?
Good. In all seriousness, how much Blackhawks game tape have you been through over the last week?
You know what? A little bit. I wouldn't say a lot. I've been doing more work on our team. I just think it's going to be ultra important to get your own team up and running first. So we've had all of us coaches have kind of taken different parts of our game and dissected some parts of it. So we'll make sure we'll come back. We'll have a little review, but we'll be ready for Chicago. But the majority of the stuff we've been doing is really about making sure our team is prepared and we're going to do the things that makes us successful, and we'll know what the enemy's doing, but we've got to make sure we get ourselves back up and running here. Different situation for everybody. I tell you, I've been through some lockouts, some shortened seasons, things like that. But this is a different animal. This one, so we'll concentrate on ourselves and be ready.
That's the interesting topic for everybody. Is everyone's walking? Like, how do you prepare for the unknown? Everyone's walking through uncharted territory. Like, do you know how you're going to run your camp, even though you don't really know when it's going to get going?
I have an idea. We've had conference calls with our players every couple weeks or so, and as we've gone along, we've kind of put just a few guidelines in place of things that we're thinking about. But until you have a true timeline, it's hard. You know, like we thought we had a great training camp when we started the year, and we're going to focus on some things we did in there. But one of the biggest factors is to try to get yourself up and going and have the competitive mindset that you're going to need going into those games. So you're going to probably do more scrimmaging, more competitive drills to make sure guys get back into that competitive mode in camp, but it all depends on your time frame you're looking at also. So we've gone through a lot of different scenarios, and once we get the parameters we're working with, we'll kind of whittle it down and make sure we're ready.
Dave Tippett, head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, here on Tim and Sid as we wait for hockey to return. Coach, earlier today, the Premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, was asked about the NHL, and he let it slip, and I don't know how many people caught it, but he let it slip that after conversations with some of the bigwigs, they were hoping to get things really up and running, as in games, potentially by August 1st. What are the whispers on your end? I know my goal here is not to get you in trouble, Coach, because I know there's a lot of conversations going on. But what are you hearing? Because we're not hearing it.
You know what? The only thing that I'm going on, and you know, there's phase two that's going to start, and players are going to get up and going, and then you're going to go hopefully into phase three, which is training camp. And the only timeline that I'm really going on right now is it's not going to start before July 10th. So what I basically talk to our players about is try to put yourself in a normal off season. Where would you be in a normal off season? So to me, if your training camp is going to start sometime mid-July, if we play, this is a big if here, if it's going to play sometime in mid-July, you got to look at yourself as this is August right now. What would you be doing in August? Are you skating? You know, the players are skating on their own. You're doing some training. You know, the one caveat to that is they're still have to do it without big numbers and things like that within the guidelines. But put yourself in a situation where you feel comfortable that you're building up to that training camp, and then we'll work with it from there once we get to training camp. You know, we're going to have at least probably 2 or 3 weeks, I would guess, in training camp. You're going to have, some time to ramp up. But it's the timelines, that's the hard part. And you can have a plan in place, but until you get definite timelines and definite parameters to work with, again, it's hard to focus on that.
Dave Tippett joining us here on Tim and Sid. And I know that sometimes you can look at sports media and think these jackasses just go out there and wing it. But we attempt to study. We attempt to understand a lot of what you guys are going through and maybe even put ourselves in your shoes. I would guess that you would want a couple of games to get your sea legs and to understand where you're at and understand that this is not afforded to anyone and that you're just kind of just going to jump and go. Do you think that you have to have kind of plan A, B, C, different permutations of lines just in case it doesn't hit in game one, anything else you've ever done?
You know what? I've got an idea where we're going just because it's a different training camp in that sense that you know the players. Like going into last year's training camp, there was a lot of unknowns. We had new people there. We had some young people come in. You know, and 3 or 4 days into training camp, I could tell Ethan Bear was a really good player. And I'm going like, this kid, he's a good player. Like this is somebody that I didn't know well enough, but he's coming to camp and really played well. And he caught the attention and you could say, okay, this kid might fit in our lineup. Now it might be the similar thing coming to a training camp here. There might be some players ahead. There might be some players behind. You got maybe a young player who's really worked out hard and coming in and really playing well, and you might have a veteran guy that needs some more work. So you can't really have an idea where you're going, but to say that that's set in stone and somebody comes in and maybe he's not in shape or somebody's, comes in overweight or a kid comes in and just is unbelievable, that changes that. So you have to leave yourself open for those options. But you have to have an idea where you're at, too. And that's the interesting thing about this time is you know your players. It's not as if there's any unknowns where you signed a free agent and you hope he's going to be good. Or you know exactly what you have, and you got to get him up and running as quick as you can.
Dave Tippett, head coach of the Oilers here on Tim and Sid. We still are waiting to find out what the hub cities will be. I'm curious, Coach, is there an advantage to the Edmonton Oilers if Edmonton's a hub city?
I don't think it is, because I think you'd be in the same pot as everybody else just because it's going to be – the guidelines are going to be so strict for every team. I mean, you might be in Edmonton, but you're not going to be able to live at home. You're going to live in the hotel like everybody else. So you're going to be very similar to a visiting team. And it's hard to even say that because you don't know what the parameters are. Like Edmonton might be a host city, but they might put us somewhere else. You never know. So until that comes through, I don't think it's going to be an advantage. I, from what I understand, the league wants to make sure there's no advantages for anybody. So we're looking at it right now as we'll just take whatever comes and we've got to be prepared, whether it's Edmonton or somewhere else.
Coach, in studying that history, the one thing that I've always learned is you can never underestimate the heart of a champion. In drawing the Chicago Blackhawks, do you guys have to engage a little differently, knowing that in a short series there's guys over there who have been in this before, who have gone through this and come out on top before?
Definitely a factor. You have Taves and Kane and Keith. When you look at that team, they have a championship pedigree there. So that's something that certainly will be not lost in our preparation.
A lot of rings and gold medals on that side.
Lots of winning.
They aren't the team they used to be, but it's when you're best of five and you're looking at that resume, it's interesting when you look at it on paper. Coach, I want to look at some of the numbers from your guys on paper, specifically Draisaitl. He's already got the Art Ross. Are we all of the opinion he's a Hart Trophy winner, although it's not official? If you just want to make him the Hart Trophy winner now, Coach, go ahead. You're allowed. He's your player.
Well, I'm going to go in Kenny Holland's vein, where somebody asked him the same question. He said, I'm glad I don't get a vote because we got two guys that would fit in that group, you know. So, between both Draisaitl and Connor, I mean, they had their spurts in the year. They were both really good together early. Connor was really good in December, and Draisaitl was a little down. Connor got hurt in the second part of the series, and Draisaitl really took over and really carried the team on his back for a while. So between the two of them, you could make an argument for both. Obviously, Draisaitl, with the points he got and being the leading scorer in the league, I think that that's always something that is weighted with that. So both of them are very deserving, and there's other guys in the league that have had great seasons also. So, I would love to see one of our guys get it, but I've talked to Leon about it, about he's not into individual things. He wants to win. That's the greatest, one of the greatest things about our group right now. We have a couple of young superstars that are motivated and hungry to win, not just win scoring races or not play in the playoffs. They want to win in the playoffs. So I feel good about where they're at mentally wise, that the individual stuff is all nice, but they're looking for a bigger prize than that. As a coach, that's what you want to hear.
Head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, Dave Tippett, joining us here on Tim and Sid Coast to Coast on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 360, as well as the Sportsnet Radio Network. I know it's hard to completely understand the health of your players when you don't see them, but do you expect to be 100% when you guys get back to camp, whenever that is? Mike Green, Nygaard, like there are guys that went down. Are you expecting a full roster to be able to be at your disposal?
Yeah, I think we will be healthy. And now some of them, like Green, had a knee injury, so you got to get on the ice and test it. But he'll certainly be in camp. Nygaard missed a lot of time, and it's I'm sure his legs will be there. But when you break a hand in surgery on your hand, it takes a while to get the feel back. So he'll have to get up and going pretty quick. He's an interesting player because his speed and tenacity, could be factors in a playoff series, but he needs to get his hands working, and that's going to be the big question with him. We had a few other bumps and bruises that I don't expect anybody to not be in camp. So we're probably like just about everybody else in the league, where the majority of their players are all back and healthy. That's what could make this a really interesting playoff, because there's no advantages or disadvantages for anybody.
What advantages and disadvantages, Coach Tippett, would you like? Because Tim, in the previous segment, the NBA tomorrow, they're going to finalize their return to play. And Tim was reading an article from Dave McMenamin of ESPN about what advantages, and some of them were tongue-in-cheek, a higher-seeded team should have. Should you, as a higher-seeded team, should you have last change in the entire round? Like, what kind of things? Because I think we all agree you should have something if it's a neutral ice surface with no fans. There should be something there for the higher-seeded Edmonton Oilers to enjoy. How many conversations along those lines have taken place?
Not a lot. You expect, there's certain things you expect in a best of five series. You expect to have the extra home ice advantage, or the advantage of being the home team. I think that goes without saying. But some of the location advantages, I think, are, you take those and throw them out the window, because it's, everybody's going to be on the same page. Like going into Chicago Stadium, that's a hard place to play. The fans are unbelievable there, so that's an advantage that Chicago's had that comes out to play. Same with our fans in Edmonton. We think we're a hard building to play in. So all those things are out. So some of the advantages of, you can have through a tactical point of view, hopefully you still get those as a higher seed. But other than that, I think that's going to be about it. In the whole realm, and I'm all right with that. I think you try to stay as close to what you'd have in a normal playoff as you can. Understanding these circumstances are, a little out of the norm, but as close as you can, and away you go. And if you're going to, you got to earn your way to a championship. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it should be now.
We all kind of understand that these are trying times and completely different circumstances for a run to the postseason, something the NHL hasn't seen since 1919. Are you worried at all about your health, safety, and even just your comfort in the health and safety of standing behind a bench?
No, because I have full confidence in the doctors and the people that will put us in those situations wouldn't do it unless they thought it was safe for everybody. And it's I have a sister-in-law who used to be a pilot for a major airline in in the States, and I used to ask her, is it safe to go on there? And she used to tell me that if it wasn't safe, I wouldn't fly it. So I have full confidence of doctors that they're going to put us in those situations. They understand the risks, and they're willing. They're thinking it's safe, so there's no reason I shouldn't think it's safe.
Fair enough. And hopefully when it's safe, we can see some hockey again and see you out there. Coach Tippett, we really appreciate it.
That would be great for everybody. I know we have a motivated team. We were really looking forward to playoff action. I'd like our young group to get in the playoffs and really experience that. So hopefully we can get some of that and get our season back and going and see what we can do in the playoffs.
I have faith you will. Thanks, Coach. Let's talk again soon. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
No problem. There's
Dave Tippett,
anytime.
Head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, who, if all things stay as they are, as Coach kind of alluded to towards the end, we don't know what's going to happen over the next little while, but let's stay optimistic. Are scheduled to get the Chicago Blackhawks in the play-in round as best of five. Still don't know what the lengths of rounds one and two are going to be. That discussion is ongoing between the PA and the National Hockey League, but that is where we stand right now. And dare I say, Tim, I don't want to call it the highest profile play-in round matchup.
One of them.
There's some interesting ones, but it's right up there, right?
One of them. And let me say this, too. I know that folks in Edmonton, one, are scared of the hearts of those champions and those gold medalists that will be suiting up for the Chicago Blackhawks. And I understand why you would be. Especially when they had, a 2% chance of making the postseason when all this...
They were done. They were done.
Pushed pause on. But, and this is, dare I call Sir Mix-a-Lot, it's a big but. If you get by Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Corey Crawford, that could be a huge learning experience for that young group that he was just talking about. And why he was looking forward to the, if you go into the postseason and you are able to get past a bunch of champions, that could be a real great starting position. Because, listen, we've seen it before. We have seen teams that win the cup be tested in their first round. And it is rare for a team to roll through the postseason without actually being tested and coming through the other side. I wouldn't be surprised if the Edmonton Oilers get past this, that 10 years down the road, they don't look back and say, man, global pandemic, first round, best of five, Chicago with Toews, Kane, Keith, and Crawford wasn't a big jump-off point for a very young and exciting franchise.
Well, if that's your warm-up and you get through it, you're in good shape. I completely agree with you. So hopefully they get that chance and we can watch it along with hockey fans across the country and Edmonton. All right. So the NHL has a return to play plan. It's still being worked out, but they have a return to play plan. Kinda the NBA tomorrow, 12:30 Eastern, Board of Governors will vote on their return to play plan today. Major League Soccer agreed on their return to play plan, which includes a CBA extension to 2025, by the way. What the hell is happening in Major League Baseball? That's the one left. That's the one we're all kind of looking at. Dave Shinen of the Washington Post is not optimistic. I am, although I could be really wrong on this. We'll talk to Dave next and see where we're at. Tim and Sid on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet590.ca, podcast. We're on a lot of places.
This is Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet. If you've missed the show to this point, you can catch it on demand on Rogers Ignite and check out what Dave Tippett, head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, had to say about the NHL's return to play, and our old friend Dwayne Casey, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, joined us after making what was... a very touching statement on Twitter, after some fine work, by the way, during COVID-19 and the start of this global pandemic. He had been doing great work in the community, but he released a statement on Twitter that tugged at a lot of people's heartstrings, and he came on and did the exact same thing. So if you want to check that out, please do so on demand on Rogers Ignite and also wherever you get your podcasts.
Hear, hear. As mentioned before the break, NBA is going to have a huge announcement tomorrow regarding return to play. Major League Soccer locked that up today after a rather contentious negotiation in the last 48 to 72 hours. National Hockey League is still finalizing their stuff. Major League Baseball, nope. Someone was going to be fourth in this. I didn't think it would be Major League Baseball, Timmy. Full disclosure, but someone was going to be fourth. Dave Shonen of the Washington Post, and unfortunately, good friend of Jeff Blair, is joining us here on Tim and Sid. Dave, how are things, man?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. Hope you guys are the same.
Let me throw this one at you. I see the owners and the players agreeing on things here. They're agreeing on a DH in the National League. They're agreeing basically on playoff format. Based on what I've read, they've agreed on health parameters to a certain extent. If we're talking about 50-game season on the owner's side, 114 on the player side, there is a middle there, right? Like, there is an obvious place where this can go. Right? Like, am I being unreasonable in that opinion, Dave?
No, I mean, it's elementary school math, right? I mean, the midpoint between 114 and 50 happens to be 82, which happens to be the number of games MLB originally proposed. The players would accept if it were at the full prorated salaries that they believe agreed to in March. So there is a way forward here, but you know, it's going to require both sides to show some trust in each other and, sort of solidarity in order to get a season off the ground under very difficult circumstances. And at this point, that's what's lacking. There's no trust. There's no shared sense of purpose.
When you say there's no trust, like it almost stops me dead in my tracks. There's no trust and there's no shared sense of purpose. Like that's a damn hard thing to get over, is it not?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, what this boils down to is Major League Baseball claiming they would lose money with every game that they play without fans unless the players accept a further pay cut. And the players don't trust those numbers. They don't trust what the league is telling them. They want the league to open the books and document that. And MLB will only go so far in doing that. They won't open their books fully. There's ways that corporations can hide money, right? Hide revenues, and baseball is no different. I mean, their revenue projections don't include things like money from the RSNs, which a lot of them own, or, you know, development around their ballparks on the property that, you know, create streams of revenue for them. That's not included. So, you know, the union just doesn't trust that MLB is going to lose as much money as they claim. And that really fundamentally is where the difference is.
Dave Shonen of the Washington Post here on Tim and Sid talking about how baseball doesn't get it. Dave, in terms of the announcements today from MLS and the NBA, like baseball was under pressure as it was. Does this amp it up? Like do the announcements from the other leagues today move the needle? Like would you be surprised later tonight if we saw reports on Twitter that we had a quote unquote breakthrough because of some of the other news we've seen today?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, you would think in a normal world that would make a difference. But baseball's problems are so entrenched we're talking decades of labor distrust, you know, and it's been worse the last 3 or 4 years than it has been at any time, probably since the strike of 94-95. Labor relations in baseball are at a low point. And that goes back to the 2016 deal that players believe, you know, may have been a bad one and that has damaged free agency and fundamental things like that. So, you know, baseball is just way too deep into its own problems to be moved by other sports. Now, they should be. They should look at the example of the NBA, MLS, and see that, you know, there's shared purpose there, and that's the way to get through this and to move forward. But they just don't. They just can't.
Dave Shannon, Washington Post, joining us here on Tim and Sid. So is there a chance that in the end, baseball players, baseball owners understand that the damage that could be done to the future of the game by not playing in a moment where people are starving for some sort of distraction for many different reasons could be worse than whatever damage could be accrued by getting a deal done on either side for 2020?
Well, you know, if you talk to each side, they say, of course, yeah, we understand that, but it's the other side's fault, you know? So it's not, you know, it's even understanding what it would do to the sport, it doesn't seem to move the needle. You know, I mean, there could be MLB, you know, what's going to end up happening is this is all going to be procedural and legal avenues. You know, Major League Baseball believes they have the power to implement a schedule in the absence of a deal. So they could go to the union and say, okay, we don't have a deal, so we're just going to implement a 50-game season, and you don't have a say in it. Well, the union's going to challenge that, and, you know, it could be tied up in grievance process, arbitration process. So that's not really going to help. The only chance we have here is, I think, you know, both sides not necessarily giving in on anything, but just going to the other and saying, look, let's get in a room, or in this case, a virtual teleconference on Zoom, and we're not leaving until we get something done. Now, there are give and take options here that could help things. The union could agree to defer a lot more money. Baseball, Major League Baseball doesn't necessarily want to do that because it adds to their collective debt for 2021 and beyond at a time when we don't know what those revenues are going to look like. They don't want to do that. But maybe that is a way forward. You know, maybe the union could accept a small pay cut on top of the March 26th one if some other avenues are met. And maybe there is a way forward. But I will tell you this, from covering this for the last 2 or 3 months, this is about as low as it's been in the entire process.
And that's saying something for Major League Baseball. They've had some low negotiating moments down through the years. Dave, before we let you go, forgive my ignorance, are you in Washington right now?
Well, I'm in Maryland, but yes.
Maryland, okay. So, what's it like to be in that part of the world in this moment before we let you go? Because there is another world out there, and quite frankly, this baseball story is pissing me off, and I just want to talk to you as a human. How are you doing?
Yeah.
What's it like where you are?
Well, that's a great question. I appreciate you asking that. I mean, it's very unsettling, for sure. I mean, our country feels like it's at an inflection point where any number of things can happen. A lot of them not good. But at the same time, this inflection point feels like a turning point where good things can start to happen. There's way more cognizance. There's way more awareness now than there was even a few years ago about the systemic problems in our country. And there's way more people expressing that and signaling their awareness of it. So I like to think that this could be an inflection point that leads to positive progress. But I also understand and am unsettled by the fact that it could be an inflection point that it leaves us in an even deeper crisis than we're in now.
Yeah, it's definitely a moment of moral imperative, and hopefully
we'll
end up on the right side of that moral imperative. We appreciate the conversation. Let's do it again, and hopefully we'll have some baseball to talk about, and hopefully we'll have some change that comes. And we'll do it with a bigger smile on our face when we do it.
Yeah, and that would be great on both counts.
Yes, absolutely. It would be.
Take care, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, guys.
Be well. There is Dave Shinen, Washington Post. It is in, I mean, Maryland, for those who don't know, suburban Washington, D.C.
Right, right.
A lot
there.
Of people who work in Washington, D.C. will live in Maryland. So.
And a guy who works for the Washington Post, listen, if you've been following at all, the level of work that is going into putting those papers together, or paper like that together right now, especially considering their vicinity, I'm sure he has a lot of colleagues in it, so to speak.
Yeah.
So I hope you didn't mind, Tim. I wanted to bring it up because I can only.
No, not at all.
Take
at all.
Just owners and players fighting for so long when there's just more interesting, relevant stuff out there. So, but thank you for letting me ask that. I think he appreciated it as well. So.
Here's the one question that I have, and I brought it up yesterday when we were talking about return to play and when we were getting the Taylor Twellman suggestion that we were getting close on the MLS. And then when we went off the air, McMenamin started tweeting about the NBA, and then Woj hit you with the NBA. It seems like, and none of this confirmed, but it's pretty damn close, both of those leagues are going to Orlando. And like I said yesterday, a lot of these states that have been open for a while, because a lot of people are distracted by other things, and understandably so, they haven't been focusing on the COVID-19 numbers. And I rattled a few of them off to you, Sid, yesterday. As the NBA and MLS are getting set to return to play in Orlando, Florida reported 1,317 new COVID-19 cases today. It's their highest number since April 17th.
It's a lot.
Their highest number since April 17th. And granted, that number is still lower than a lot of states. I don't know who and what to believe, and I don't know that anyone really knows that. You try your best to understand how and why we come to these numbers. And total deaths, to be fair to Florida, have gone down. So, but
total reported deaths, Timmy. Let's be fair about that, too. Total reported deaths.
We still don't understand a lot about this disease. I was reading that, you know, a couple of days ago, that it might be a cardiovascular disease and not a respiratory disease. So there's a lot of things that we don't know. But to see that number from Florida and assume that announcements of return to play will lead to return to play, I feel like we should just cross our fingers and hope for the best.
But I know where you're going with it, Tim. The one thing I would say is, and there is evidence now to back it up, not a ton, but there is recent European soccer evidence to back it up. If you bubble people, if they allow themselves to be in a bubble,
right,
where the testing is rampant. Like today, Tim, they've had five rounds of testing in the English Premier League ahead of coming back June 17th. The results from today, 1,197 tests taken.
Tests. Yep.
One positive. That's after basically a month to 3 weeks, forgive me, of quarantine. Someone inside Tottenham's organization was tested positive. But there is a feeling that if you bubble it, regardless of what else is going around, happening around you or in the state, wherever, which is the plan, it'll be a small world after all in Orlando for MLS and NBA. Sorry. They believe that if you test every day.
I didn't expect that.
Probably didn't deserve it, but thank you very much. If you bubble it for TV purposes, which is all this is about, you kind of know what you're dealing with if you test every day. And the NHL plans on testing every day. As said by Gary Bettman at the time, again, reinforced today by the Premier of Ontario, who spoke way more on this than I anticipated. So if you bubble it, you at least know what you're dealing with. And there is recent evidence to suggest you can kind of contain it and put 11v11 on the field, or in basketball sense, 5v5, that you know in that moment, to the best of your ability, are not positive. But that's only under a bubble scenario. Baseball's going to have their own deal. I don't know how that's going to go. Now, you're going to try and bubble people on the road, But what about people at home? I haven't heard a plan in that regard. I don't know what they're going to do. So right. I think the number
where baseball has a tougher.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think the results that are coming back from leagues that are doing this consistently are you have a chance. And I think that's what the NBA and MLS are looking at. If you test every day and quarantine, you have a chance. But everyone has to buy into that, right? Like if you're not willing to be quarantined, then none of it is worth anything to you.
Let me ask you a question before we go. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to lighten the mood, but let me ask you the question before we go to break. Are you now into pumped in sound in crowdless games?
I watched a bit of Dusseldorf, Fortuna Dusseldorf and Bayern Munich on Sportsnet 1 on Saturday. I was insulted. Yep. I was insulted. I want no part of it. It is for lazy people. If you think that's interesting to have fake crowd noise pumped in when you know that's not the reality, then go to a Jays game in July when they're not good, because that's up your alley. I was insulted as a sports fan. I'd rather hear the passing
sports
of the ball,
snob.
the swearing in any language. Are you telling me you don't want to hear guys on the court in any game have a go?
I thought that they were very smart with it, and I didn't think that you didn't hear any of the yelling and the screaming. I thought you heard all of it, and you heard a little chant in the background from a crowd that wasn't there.
I was offended right off the front. My view was clouded initially
watch for?
Like 5 minutes. Hated it. No, all soccer right, games are longer than that, but I hated it.
We'll take the man. If you want to judge after 5 minutes, go right ahead. We're going to take the break.
I normally judge even sooner than that.
Yeah, you do. 5 minutes. Even me. We'll take the break. We'll come back, and we will do the good news of the day. And I'm starting to wonder if we shouldn't do that for everything now. More good news. Just a smile. Tim and Sid.
Are you suggesting Tim does every work in every segment with good news of the day? I could be down for that, Timmy. That's not a bad idea. I could be down for that.
I did not say that.
Sorry, that's what I heard. My tie line must be off. That's what I heard. Sorry. My bad, Timmy.
Don't make me come over there.
I love you, man. I love you.
I love you too. Take the break, come back with more Tim and Sid right here on the Sportsnet family of channels.
This is Tim and Sid on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Tim's good news of the day coming up here momentarily. I did want to acknowledge the Scarborough Stingers shirt that Tim has been wearing throughout the show. For those on radio or listening on pod who haven't been able to see it, Timmy, just Scarborough Stingers baseball quickly. The significance of the Scarborough Stingers baseball shirt for those who aren't familiar.
I got it for free.
That's all I need to hear, McCallum.
My son plays baseball for the Scarborough Stingers.
All right, there you go. That's all I wanted.
Said I would rock it.
Little love for the Scarborough Stingers.
And I was saying, like, they should sell these. I think a lot of people who grew up in the area in and around where I grew up would definitely rock a Scarborough baseball shirt.
I know someone who had a Tim and Sid T-shirt on while they were grocery shopping a couple of weeks ago. I haven't told you this story. And they became quickly aware that if you want to socially distance, do not wear that T-shirt. Because people were coming up to this person regularly in every aisle saying, where can I get one? Right. And they're wearing a mask, like they are being as careful as they can, hate the shopping experience, freaks them out. They're like, I should never have worn this damn T-shirt, like, not at all. Like, I should have put on Jay and Dan or something. Like, everyone was coming up to me, and it was just one after another after another. They say another thing. I'm sorry.
One of the things that I don't like when we put up clips from the show is that context is lost. And we had a conversation about Drew Brees's comment earlier in the day about the way he sees the flag, and he thinks that it's disrespectful to kneel. And you and I had a conversation and I got upset because I feel like it's going to be hijacked and we're going to get into the same conversation that we had 4 years ago and that we got by instead of just focusing on equality. And now I see Aaron Rodgers' name is trending. And he says a few years ago, we were criticized for locking arms in solidarity before a game. It has never been about the anthem or the flag. Not then, not now. Listen with an open heart. Let's educate ourselves and then turn word and thought into action. Hashtag wake up America. Hashtag it's time for change. And I don't want to comment on whether or not he's right or wrong. I'm just saying this is now evidence that we're walking down that road again. Because someone made it about something that it wasn't. It was just about equality.
I think we're 8 miles down the road in a Ferrari, considering where we were when we were like 30 minutes before this show. This story has, it's already been hijacked. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like we're already there. And if you don't like it, too bad. And some of the biggest names in sports are getting
through his eyes. He was just talking through his eyes, and I get it. But the problem is people were asking you to have some compassion and some empathy and look through other people's eyes. Difficult time for a lot of people, but one thing in the last few months that has reinforced, it's better to have conversation than to not have the conversation, which is what we're doing right now. And with that in mind, Rodgers is bringing back Speaker's Corner to help stimulate discussion about systemic racism and discrimination and to amplify voices that maybe haven't been given the platform that you and I have. Many remember Speaker's Corner, which ran from 1990 to 2008. No longer a booth on Queen Street. Now people can simply share their videos on the Speaker's Corner website on social media with the hashtag SpeakUp. Videos will also be featured on Rogers TV and radio stations, including Sportsnet and City TV. Did a young Sixero ever pop into the booth in downtown Toronto and hit Speaker's Corner?
Three things. One, whenever I would, it would smell like pee. Two, somebody in our business.
Very true.
You know. Mm-hmm. Someone in our business, Tim, I don't know where, has the real outtake clips from Speaker's Corner. You know the real ones? Like, there's some stuff that happened in those booths that wasn't meant for television, and they have the actual stuff. Third, if Bare Naked Ladies don't send in a video, I'm going to be very disappointed. Because they were one of the originals. I believe they sang,
yeah,
If I Had a Million, was it If I Had $1 Million?
I feel like they, it was, but I might be wrong. Unless I got lost.
We're going
that.
Back now. We're going back. So forgive me, but those are all Speaker's Corner for a lot of reasons. Good and hilarious were a huge part of our childhood in Southern Ontario. I don't know if they had Speaker's Corners in other parts of the country, They ended up with them. It was as common as wearing that City TV Everywhere T-shirt at Canada's Wonderland and getting a prize. It was just something you did. So whenever you bring up Speaker's Corner, and I saw the release today from Rodgers, I did smile. Because the memories from Speaker's Corner were nice. They were nice.
We're not going to have enough time to get through all of the good news of the day. So I want to remember Chris Egge and Michael Grange's article, column, on Chris Egge. On sportsnet.ca. We'll do that tomorrow. A lot of guys putting their money where their mouth is. PK Subban, $50,000. Patrice Bergeron, he had a very well put post and donated $25,000 to both the NAACP of Boston and the Centre Multiethnique de Quebec and Sydney. As of today, we are now, and those recovered from COVID-19. Over 3 million people with antibodies and all provided for research and understanding. 3.1 million recovered from COVID-19.
It's great news, Tim. Good job. It was a pleasure, Timmy. I'll see you tomorrow. Kids, let's see what tomorrow brings. Who knows? You've been watching and listening to Tim and Sid. And as we leave you, don't forget, kids.
I wash your hands, washing your hands, washing your hands.